Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 256 of Storyteller Conclave. This is a show all about helping you run the best tabletop role-playing game that you can, whether you're a new storyteller or dungeon master learning the craft, or an experienced storyteller looking to take your game to the next level. I am Sarah.
I'm Rob.
How are we doing, Rob?
I'm trying to adjust, and I can see that there's a problem, and it's just this minor little thing, because you were just barely overdriven.
Okay.
And it was like, I was watching it peak, and I'm like, oh no, I guess we're going to have to, like, figure this one out again.
Oh no.
It's okay. I think we'll be okay. Just give yourself a little distance from the mic. We might be able to survive this one out before I have to figure out what's going on with the board. So.
All right.
But,
yes. Rob's expert advice. Hey, Sarah, shut up a little bit.
just take it from, like, a 10 to a 7.
Yeah, you're at a 10. We need you down around a 7.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that'll probably be the catch for this one, because, like, there's just this weird tweak point on the board, and I have a funny feeling it has to do with the fact that we've literally not had to touch the board in 4 years.
Yeah, some of that.
And I think that, like, I tried to do a little bit of contact cleaning, but I don't think it actually functioned like it was supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think we're at a weird power point on the board, and I that might be the issue. I'm not going to say like it's dead or anything like that, but it definitely is. It's definitely going to be weird. So,
well, however, will we assure the longevity of our podcast?
Clearly, we just have to invest more hardware, you know, and rebuild from the ground up.
Exactly.
We'll just nuke it from orbit.
It's
the only way to be sure. So. As per usual, we've been too damn busy to really do anything.
Oh, God, yeah. The Mad Elf tried to schedule his next Mouse Guard game.
Yeah, and that went from, hey, do we want to do something in April or May?
I know May's going to be a little weird with the wedding and stuff with that going on, but do we want to shoot for an April game? And we were like, just push it to June.
Just push it to June. It's safer for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, there's just so much.
Your April straight up exploded, like, this afternoon.
This morning, it did. Like, every last square inch of my April got taken. And I was totally unprepared for that. That messed up my whole morning and like, most of my work day, strangely enough. But I've been somewhat blessed that this season of my work...
Mm-hmm.
is a little lighter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, normally right now, I would be in heavy regression. We'd be dealing with all kinds of stuff with a release. And it's like, everything that's going into this release is kind of for the fall.
Mm-hmm.
So it can't get used really yet. So it's just a light, minor stuff. And it's like, okay, we're doing all right with this. Like, we can ease into this a little bit. So it's giving me just a little bit of space.
Hey, man, looking gift horses in the mouths there, you know?
Exactly. Like... But and you've had the benefit of... a little bit of an, like, knock on wood, lighter few days? Just a few.
Depends on how you define light. Like, they
absolutely... In comparison
absolutely...
to November and December?
That's true.
That's what I'm comparing it to.
Yeah.
Like, it's been lighter.
Nothing will hit that. I think what I heard was that they were clearing out a backlog of something or another because they had some sort of policy change, so they had to get all the old cases out. All at once, so they just rubber stamped them and shoved them into my inbox, so I had my record level of work, like three people's worth of work dumped on me.
But at the same time, you're getting a backup.
It's true.
That is you have to accept that as a nicety.
It is. So. They're good. There's good things happening. So
yes.
Wedding planning is going okay.
Yeah.
And even on the way over here too, I know I've been talking about how I've been in a real nasty funk lately and not really been able to concentrate on my game or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But I had a few ideas for my game on the way over.
Oh.
Ways to kind of segue the group back into the plot, mm-hmm. and get things going, and mm-hmm. how, you know, fun ways in which that can unfold that's going to be satisfying for everybody. So
yeah. So not to segue too hard into our little discussion tonight,
mm-hmm.
but like sometimes the hardest thing is planning,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes you just need a break from it.
Yeah.
And tonight's show, although unintentionally kind of coming to this, the desserts in games is something, in storytelling, is something that kind of helps with that.
Yeah.
And kind of what we're getting at here is that to understand what a dessert really is it's like it sounds. It's to treat you. It's to treat... your players.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't need to be plot all the time.
Right, right, right. I mean, I think we sometimes want to run these, like, super serious games where, you know, the clock is ticking constantly and the big bad evil guy has got 4 out of 5 Chaos Emeralds and is mm-hmm, going to destroy mm-hmm. the world tomorrow if mm-hmm. you don't stop him right now, you mm-hmm. know. But, man, like, you can't keep that pace going all the time.
No, definitely not.
And... but no, I mean, not even that. Even if you're not running, like, just a super serious plot, like, sometimes you just need time for fun, whimsical stuff to happen.
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing is by setting these things in on the regular, mm-hmm. especially if you're planning on a longer campaign, and you, and you're stepped... Did I cook you?
Wow. Tea is boiling hot, guys.
Oh, Lord. Usually I started up a little earlier. I apologize there.
I made a mistake there. I gambled. Uh-oh. I gambled and I lost.
Uh-oh. But yeah, usually, like, you get into a game with a campaign with the mind frame that it's going to be a long game. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe it's going to go over the course of a year. Maybe it's going to be, you know, thinking 7 sessions or something along like that. But you don't want it to all be drive, drive, drive. Putting these things in on a regular interval kind of lets your players know that they're going to happen and gives them the reminder that this is a calm. I mean, the One Ring has the Fellowship, the Return, right? As, mm-hmm. as part of the system.
Yeah. Even Malzgard has Return that. Back to like a home base, and you've got a patron that kind of, you mm-hmm. know, takes care of that all for you.
Even to a degree, it's not as black and white, mm-hmm. but it's definitely stated within the design of Blades in the Dark with its vices.
Yeah.
You know, how do you recover? You recover through your method of relaxation.
Mm-hmm.
And so that design into the game, that pause, that comfort, in games that don't have it, seems odd when it's inserted, but it doesn't need to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to talk a bit tonight about that and why you might want to pull away from plot.
Yeah.
So
I mean, let's start there. Okay. You know, we're all busy people with busy lives and such like that. We just discussed how difficult it is to get one small gaming session of mm-hmm. Mouse Guard in a 3-month span.
Right.
Why would you not focus on plot when you get there, you know?
Well, I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind is that, you know, a lot of times on the sheet, even D&D has now got this kind of stuff, is this concept of bonds between the characters.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's more than just a throwaway statement of why you guys like to hang out with each other. It can be an active thing that is worked on. And in some games, that's very meaningful.
Oh, yeah.
Because absolutely. You do need to work on it, and it does evolve,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, that evolution, although it may not be part of how the game is meant to be played, it is part of the mechanics.
Sure.
So you want to have something that makes a moment that's real about that bond, so it's no longer just a throwaway sentence on the sheet.
Right.
You want it to connect with the player so it connects with a memory.
Mm-hmm.
For the player. Because once the player has a memory of it, they're going to bring that back around.
Yeah, it's one thing to say that, like, you know, oh, this guy's my old mentor because it says so on my sheet. It says John, mentor.
Right
here, see?
Yep.
But it's another thing when, like, John comes over and is like, hey, sport, how's it going? You know, let's catch up. Let's have a beer.
Mm-hmm.
And you just get to sit and talk with him for 20 minutes, you know, mm-hmm. or whatever mm-hmm. is entertaining and pace correct for the group, you know?
Exactly.
And then, you know, 3 sessions later, when John is in trouble, you're not like, who?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
He's my mentor.
You're like, oh, crap. They got John, you know? Exactly. I had a beer with that guy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or once you know the town, and now that the town is on fire,
mm-hmm.
do you do the thing you're currently doing, or do you go to the town?
Right.
And help save it?
Mm-hmm.
That creates that distance of obligation and how it connects with the player.
Yeah, exactly. This was this. I mean, because this is like ostensibly something you used to see a lot in the TV shows.
Oh, very much so.
Sean and I have been watching a lot of older TV shows lately. We've gone through Deep Space Nine. That was 7 seasons long. Mm-hmm. Okay, and we did Farscape right after that, mm-hmm. and that was 3 seasons of Farscape. We haven't seen the Peacekeeper Wars yet, so no spoilers for that. But, mm-hmm. But we're talking like 21 to 27 episodes every season, right? And one of the things that you notice a lot, especially going back to watch old TV shows that have that sort of breathing room in their schedule, is that you end up with like 18 episodes of plot and 9 episodes of just filler, mm-hmm. right? And now when you say it like that, when you call it filler, mm-hmm. you know, it sounds like it's a bad thing.
Right,
you
know, right.
Of like, we could streamline this so mm-hmm. much. Let's get to the plot. Let's just,
right,
you know.
Right, right.
But the problem is that, you know, fat means flavor, you know. Right. And we use cooking metaphors mm-hmm, all the time. Mm-hmm. Fat is flavor, right? And if, like, they had just blitzed through Deep Space Nine and, like, just focused on the main plot, you wouldn't get these strong bonds that you see between all the characters that are, like, famous, you mm-hmm. know? Like, Miles O'Brien and Dr. Bashir, you know?
Yeah. Best
friends in all of Star Trek. You ask any Trekkie who the best friends in Star Trek are, mm-hmm. and you'll get a few, like, oh, Kirk and Spock and some of that, and blah, 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 until someone mentions Miles O'Brien and Julian Bashir, and they'll be like, oh, you know what? No, we can't hold a candle to that. We cannot hold a candle to that friendship. But that friendship only comes across because you give it the breathing room, mm-hmm. you know? You get moments of them playing darts in Quark's bar.
Yeah.
You know, going to the Hollow Suites together mm-hmm. to play the Alamo, or, you know, shooting down Jerry's over Britain during World War II or whatever, you know.
There was a scene that I remember from one of them where O'Brien was actually arguing with his wife, and Bashir was in the hallway kind of listening,
mm-hmm.
and I think it was Quark walked by, and he was just like, are you listening in? And he's like, no, he's like, because I thought I heard them fighting one day. Oh? And there's this, but the thing is that, like, there was that moment that, like, Bashir kind of is concerned.
Yeah, of course he is.
He's trying to figure it out, but at the same time, like, even Quark's just like, why are you concerned about your friend? Like,
there's a great moment from the other side of that, too, where O'Brien, or, like, Julian's off on some, I don't know, some conference or something like that. Or,
yeah.
Or no, I know what it was. Keiko had come back to the station because she was off for a while. I think mm-hmm. they tried to, like, write her kind of a little bit out of the show.
Yeah, yeah.
To get her out of the plot line, and Molly, too, because she mm-hmm. was a child, you know?
Right, right.
And so there was these, they wrote basically that she was doing anthropological stuff on Bajor. And so she wasn't there for a while, but when she did show up, you know, of course, O'Brien was like, this is my mm-hmm, wife, I have mm-hmm. to prioritize my family, I have to be home with them and stuff like that. And at one point, she was home for an extended stay, and he was kind of moping around a little bit. Mm-hmm. She's like, what's the matter? He's like, nothing. She's like, you barely touched your food, you've been sitting there on the couch all day, like, what's the problem? It's your day off. He's like, nothing, I'm enjoying spending time here with my family, I love you, and I'm just glad to be here. She's like, you miss your friend, don't you? What? No, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Go play with your friend. Are you sure?
Yep.
Yes, Miles, go play with your friend. He's like, okay, I'll be back by 8. She's like, don't. Just go play.
It's fine.
You know, yeah. But you don't get those moments.
No.
If you don't allow these characters to breathe, you yeah. know?
And I think that's exactly what we're talking about, is those that soft RP space. Not
right.
The hard, not the, like, we're doing something because this is a point of, you know, contention between the two of us. We have to get through this scene.
Right.
You know, it's I'm going to the bar, who wants to go with me, you know? or, you know, has anybody ever wanted to go see this play?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people are like, I'm not that interested. Oh, you should totally go see this thing. It's actually really kind of cool, you know. But that space where, like, everyone gets to kibitz a little bit and enjoy it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, your Shadowrun team on the way back from the Johnson stopping at the Stuffer Shack because they got some creds and they're hungry, but nothing's open.
Yeah.
Like, that scene of just, like, randomly trying to figure out what you're going to get from... It's not a shopping excursion. No. This is figuring out what people like, flavor-wise.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to get one of those hot dogs. Those things have been in there for, like, 4 months. Like, but they're still good. They're hot dogs, right? Like,
right.
How bad can they be? Dude, you know people die from those things all the time. Like, I just got shot at. I really don't care. Like...
They're not old, they're aged.
Exactly. Like, you know, in 2 more months you could smoke one of those.
Right.
Ooh, I could. Ooh. But it's those things that, like, that little bit of space that then lets people be flexible
mm-hmm.
with it. It's not limelighting or anything like that. And the other part about that is that there's no planning required for this.
Yeah, because I can almost feel like some of the storytellers listening to this out there going like, oh, great, this is another thing I got to plan for. And no, you really don't, you know? The great thing about allowing for, like, soft RP spaces like this is that you can instigate them really anywhere. I do this actually all the time in my games. And it's really just about knowing your NPCs well enough to give them some sort of a position on something, right? And by position, I mean any position other than idle and waiting for the PCs to do something. You know, because the NPCs have whole lives.
Yeah.
While the PCs aren't there.
Yeah.
They're doing things too, you know?
We talk about this when we did our NPC episode, where we were talking about making sure that they had vectors and motivation and a little, like, they're doing something that day.
Uh-huh.
Right? That goes doubly here. But at the same time, you don't need to plan out the scene. If all you need to do is, when they walk in the door, what is that person doing? How are they feeling?
Are they angry? Are they playful? Are they studying intently? Are they hungry? Are they anything?
But that's it. Leave it there.
Yeah.
The players will either engage, or they'll start doing whatever they're doing, and then that person will engage with them a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But you already have the feeling for the scene.
Yeah, exactly.
It feels alive. The space feels lived in.
Like, it continues when the PCs aren't there.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, a wonderful moment that you set up that it makes it feel so alive is in the last game... one of the last game sessions we had, one of our PCs brought back a skull of a dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of sat in the middle of the foyer of the guild hall, because where else would it go? Right.
Right.
Kind of a thing.
It's a dragon skull.
And eventually it was told, like, this needs to be moved somewhere else. And so we were like, it'll probably go downstairs in storage. And it was a throwaway statement.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next time we come back into the guild hall, just basically to have a conversation about something that's coming up, there are two NPCs having an argument near the stairs to the basement, and it's this curved staircase, and it's, they could turn it sideways. It's not how you turn it. It's a freaking dragon head.
Right, it's not a matter of turning it at the right point. It's a matter of leverage. Like,
right. Like, it's like, they could just lift it, like, you know, carefully, a Nord lifting a giant dragon skull. It's a matter of weight. He weighs, what, 250 pounds, and the dragon skull is, what, 360?
Right,
come
right,
come on
right.
Now.
But he could grip it by the horns.
It's not a matter of how you grip it.
It's a matter of weight ratios.
But the whole point was, it was ridiculous, but at the same time had no other reference. It was just a scene.
Yeah.
And we played into it.
Mm-hmm.
And then that scene drifted into the next of what was really going on, but it was so playful and so light.
Mm-hmm.
But it made those characters, those NPCs, feel like they lived there and were just having a conversation about things and kibitzing and poking at each other about it. You know, and in that moment, it was golden. Like, we knew those people.
Mm-hmm.
Not NPCs, not lore, not motivations. We knew them.
These were your friends talking about you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So coming from that and getting to an understanding is, are there tools to help with this?
Well, Rob, I'm glad you asked.
It was on the sheet, so.
I think especially if we hearken back to, to television as our cue on how to do, filler content like this, essentially. There's two really big ones that we can take away from our old network TV days, and that's the bottle episode and the breather episode.
Correct.
So the bottle episode's a funny one. It's interesting that I think it's probably difficult to do like as a one-to-one direct translation from what it means in a TV show to what it would mean in your tabletop RPG.
But we're going to try.
but basically, a bottle episode is, as defined, I believe, by TV Tropes.
Yeah, this is the easiest one.
An episode produced cheaply and restricted in scope to use as few regular cast members, effects, and sets as possible. Bottle episodes have also been used for dramatic effect, with limited setting and cast, allowing for a slower pace and deeper exploration of characters' traits and motives. I think that's an incomplete definition of it, because I think what really makes a bottle episode is the fact that it is encapsulated, hence the term bottle. It is cut off, essentially, from the plot before it and the plot after it.
Right, so it could be dropped into any place.
Remove it. Yeah, right. You could remove it from the show altogether, and it would mean little.
Yeah, or insert it at another random point than where it was originally put, and it would be just as fine.
Yes. For anybody who watched the recent, The Last of Us on HBO, really great show, and there is an episode, I think it's the third episode in, telling the story of Bill and Frank. They're two characters you've never heard of before. They're two characters you rarely hear of again, unless it's a side comment of, oh yeah, blah, 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 that's what we got from Bill, Or something Bill used to say, or something like that. But basically, their whole story is compartmentalized. And you see the main characters, Joel and Ellie, in there at the very beginning, I think, or somewhere in the middle, there's like a flashback scene. And then they're at the very end, basically, to... it's just a bridge episode that gets them the motivation to move on to the next set piece,
right?
It really has nothing... Like, they could have just found a truck. And it would have meant the same thing. But you wouldn't have gotten the story of Frank and Bill that way, It's a bottle episode. Frank and Bill do not exist outside of this episode. And that's, I think, the kind of thing that we're talking about. Blink is another great bottle episode of Doctor Who, where you've never really met this character before. You've never seen the Weeping Angels before. You'll see them a lot in the future because Moffat realized he could milk them for views. But that's neither here nor there. But it was a great bottle episode. In its season, it's a great bottle episode because the Doctor's barely in it.
Yeah. And so in that sense, it's something you can... basically prepackage as a moment in time that can be just dropped in. And the idea, again, is there's no planning for this. It's just a direction and a motivation and see what the players do with it.
Yeah.
The other, which is, I think, a little more common and at least understood, and again, TV Tropes does one angle on it, but we're going to kind of expand on that a little bit, and that is the breather episode. And the breather episode, as they put it, is used after a particularly grueling or emotional story arc or episode as a break partway from the sequence of intense episodes and serves as to lighten the mood, to contrast the dark mood of the previous episode. The idea behind that is if you have a lot of tension or you're going into a lot of tension, having these breather episodes give you some brevity and space. To not have everything. So sometimes it can happen before. Sometimes it can follow up after as like a palate cleanser to get you to the next thing that's still plot, but not as intense as the moment you just left.
Right. And I think it's important for like the texture of your plot, and what I mean by that is that, if everything's always go, 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 if everything's always intense, you start to get numb to it after a little bit. You start to kind of get used to that being the status quo and whatnot. And the drama and tension of the, of the pacing really loses its bite.
Well, not only that, but your players are also constantly looking over their shoulder.
Oh, sure. It gets exhausting after a while. Yeah. But if you have these breather episodes that you can put in to give them a break from the tension, to just slow down, rest on their laurels, if you're playing D&D, just take a long rest.
Mm-hmm.
And, don't give them a random encounter. Don't jump them and, have bandits or anything like that in the middle of the night, whatnot. Mm-hmm. Just let them sleep. Let them catch their breath. Let them talk at the campfire. Let them discuss the things that have been going on. Talk about it, analyze it, maybe trauma bond over it if it's mm-hmm. been really serious,
And don't make that's like more than just a frozen moment. It's not affecting the timeline.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to push out events that are, that they have to catch up with.
Right. It's important not to punish them of like, oh, you guys took 15 minutes to talk about it, so now the villain is getting away with stuff.
Exactly. I often think of it like the way Lord of the Rings handles that through the series is that there's no impending moment of doom during these pauses.
The entire book Wizard in Glass by Stephen King.
Yeah.
In the middle of the Dark Tower series.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
okay?
There's
just a pause.
He sits down and they're like, all right, you got to tell us what's going on, Roland, because you know more than what's going, than we know of here, mm-hmm. And he's like, well, it's a really long story, and of course they're all sick of his BS, so mm-hmm. they're like, we'll sit here as long as you want. You tell the story, buddy. Mm-hmm. So he's like, all right, in the beginning, blah 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 blah, and it's a thick book, mm-hmm. right? And about halfway through, the book takes an intermission to pull us back out of the extended flashback scene for multiple chapters and takes us back to their campfire. And, like I said, it's a long story. And one of the main characters looks up and goes like, wow, it's still night. Like, I feel like you've been talking for hours.
Mm-hmm.
How long is this going to last? And Roland just kind of looks up and goes, as long as I need to, I reckon.
Yeah.
Now, where was I?
Exactly. And you're like, okay.
And as he finishes the story, which is essentially the entire book,
right,
the last chapter of the book, basically, the sun starts coming up.
Right. It that's how it works.
Yep. That's how the universe works.
There's another story, and I can't remember the name of it, that a friend was telling me about, where it opens with someone coming into effectively like a pub,
mm-hmm.
and he's telling the story to this pub keep, and every once in a while it flashes back out to the pub, and there's other people there, and food's being served,
mm-hmm.
But they're still going through the story. And so, so it'll just cut and be like, hey, can I get some more tea? I'm really parched. Yeah. But you got to keep going with what happened to her, because I need to know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Like, can I get this? Yeah, we'll get you some food in a second. so you still feel the reality that's going on around that space. But it's time is very different. Because again, you're experiencing it at a different pace. I mean, there's something to be said about playing a role-playing game and what the pace of what's going on within the game versus outside of it.
Right.
Time dilation kind of gets funny. I think the other thing about breather episodes is that sometimes you can have innocuous moments that occur that are really foreshadowing. Where something gets explored or, expounded upon because maybe the PCs poke at an NPC just a little bit more and get a little more story about something. And then many episodes later, that comes to light as something important,
mm-hmm.
And, you did this with one of the characters in your game with us, and it was fantastic because we had this lovely campfire scene where we were talking about friendship and bringing them into our fold. And then later when bad things happen, the person's just like, I'm planning on doing all this terrible stuff, but you're my family, so join me.
Right.
He's sincere.
Now, mind you, he murdered the guild leader in cold blood right in front of
right
you,
front
and then
of
turned
us.
To you and went, oh, good, my friends are here.
Yeah, just like totally freaked out. But the idea is that you can get a lot out of those. You can mine those moments just a little bit.
Exactly. Like, that would not have had the same impact if he was just an NPC you were on good terms with.
Exactly.
But I gave you guys the time to bond with him as a person,
mm-hmm.
and build those relationships and swear those little oaths of, don't worry, we've got your back. You're family to us now.
And
you
it's
know?
Not like the person used that moment. They... Mm-hmm. there was nothing negative about that. That was all a genuine, honest moment.
Yeah, it was very heartfelt, which made it all the more painful later when I exploited it. It was great.
Yep. Now, to be fair, there is a one more episode style that kind of fits within these. And that is the beach episode.
Yeah, we're kind of putting that in giant air quotes because it's kind of a catch-all term that I use personally. Mm-hmm. I'm sure if you Google beach episode, it's going to have a very specific
trope
to it too. Yeah. But I kind of call any of these sort of soft play spaces beach episodes,
especially when they're joyous.
Right. I call them that because specifically, actually, of the Avatar: The Last Airbender beach episode. Where all the Firebender people go to the beach together, and hijinks ensue.
Mm-hmm.
But really, what you get, it reveals some plot a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly what you get is to learn the personality, especially of, like, Azula and her girlfriends.
Right.
You get to understand the kind of dynamic between them and whatnot, what they the different things they want out of life, and what Zuko wants and doesn't want out of life.
And one of the things about this that I think makes the difference between a breather episode and a beach episode is a beach episode within the TV trope design is basically to get the characters into beach clothing, you know, be it, you know, swimsuits or whatever, so that you can see them in a different light. You know, when a cast of characters who have traditional looks and feelings to them, we color palette or design, change into other clothing, what do they look like, right? But the hidden meaning behind that is getting them out of the clothes that they're in, out of the style that they're used to, getting them out of their armor, getting them out of that mindset, and into a comfortable space to be themselves, wholly. Kind of, in a way, unarmored, right? Where nothing is there to protect them. That affront is gone.
Yes.
And so within that, you're removing the need to have that armor. Mm-hmm. This isn't a dangerous space. No one is going to die. You're not rolling dice.
Right.
This is just you guys having a good time. Things are going to get said. Some people might get a little upset at times, but nobody's going to get aggressive and do something dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what this space is for.
Yeah.
This is space to learn, right? So in that, you learn each other while you have these vulnerabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody's walls are down a little.
You see this occasionally in a lot of, like, sitcoms and stuff like that. Like, when the friends, in Friends go to Central Perk.
The coffee shop, yeah.
The coffee shop, you know. How I Met Your Mother, they spend a lot of time, like, in the pub, just doing pub things. Obviously, you know, I mentioned Avatar: The Last Airbender, the beach episode there, you know. It's these moments where you know that everybody's kind of just, their hair is down and they're focusing on relaxing.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, the big takeaway here is that these sort of moments,
whether you're dealing with any of the ones we previously talked about,
right, don't have a solution to them.
No. Okay? You're not setting a problem before them or a puzzle or something to solve. That is not what you're doing as a storyteller, and they should know that.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the big reason is because, like, external influences are going to draw away from the main focus, and that is on the characters themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we spend so much time trying to save the world and stop the villain and rescue the hostages and earn the next piece of gear and move on to the next plot point and stop the two warring kingdoms from blah, 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 blah. We don't take these things are designed to sit down and go, okay, who are you guys as people?
Right.
You know, let's just focus on that for a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, if you throw in any sort of external stimuli like that, I mean, it's okay to throw in, like, an NPC, but, like, the NPC should just be hanging out with them, you know, or asking them questions about themselves, or just, you know, just basically having a beer, you know?
I mean, these aren't downtime either, and I'm putting downtime in the the thematic mechanical sense, right? This isn't a time for your players making shopping rolls and determining personal projects or crafting magical items or smithing new armor. It doesn't mean you can't shop, but you're not coming away with items. This isn't a venue to pick up stuff. This is literally like, if you're going to go shopping with somebody, it's for pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe you're going stall to try different foods at the festival.
Right,
and
right.
Someone's gone with you, and they're trying to encourage you.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know, to do something different. Knox had an interesting point of, like, you know, you don't always want to hang out with your coworkers, mm-hmm. right? If you consider the other characters in your campaign co-workers, your bonds are never going to work. Ever.
Agreed.
And you won't want to die for them, because I assure you, you don't want to die for your coworkers.
I really don't.
So, just understand that there's a vast level of difference between
work... I don't
even
want to eat a cold chicken nugget for them, like...
Exactly. So, but to bring this back to the point is that... So, if you're going to do these events with them, it's going to the mall versus going to buy something.
Right, 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 right. The goal of the scene, it should not be important. You know, like, you guys bought clothes. Okay, cool. We're not even going to deduct gold for it, or, you know, money for it, or whatever, you know? Mm. But what happens while you're out shopping? You know, do you splurge on things? Do you have a conversation about, you know, oh, does this armor make me look fat, or whatever? Yeah, right. I don't know. I mean, but it's... You can have a shopping scene, just make it two people out hanging out, though.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. And I, like, I'm going to say it. Knox is grinding a little bit against me on this one. He's like, depends on the situation, you know, you're not always there because you're friends.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's true, but the point of a role-playing game and the group is group cohesion.
Right.
This is to promote group. If you're just doing a roguelike grind.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to do these things. This isn't important for you. But if the point is that you have bonds and reasons why your characters might want to build more of a relationship, and as a story, that's what you're developing, then these are highly important moments to have with these characters, and not just do scene to scene, grind to grind, moment to moment, where you're out there working constantly,
mm-hmm.
right? You want to have these moments where, even if they don't agree, leave it like maybe two of the people in the group just do not get along, right?
Mm-hmm.
These moments give them the time to show why, to connect them on that commonality,
yeah.
of why they're still there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is as important in these scenes to know that they're not. Like, to have the one player, like, you know, like, well, how do I know you're going to have my back in the next fight? Because it's in the damn contract.
Right.
I never liked you from the beginning. I think you're weak. I think you're, you know, like and that's really going to make me want to stand up and put my shield in front of you tomorrow. Thanks, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, wait, hey. You know, it's just a job. Oh, this is just a job to you. You know, dying for each other is just a job for you.
There's a great moment in Farscape where Crichton and Dargo are fighting each other. Like, Crichton has some weird little appearance of impropriety, and Dargo immediately takes it as an instant sign of betrayal and tries to kill him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And Crichton's basically trying to convince him. He's like, no, I'm still on your side, you know, I did everything I could to, you know, not hurt you while I was doing that. He's like, what is it going to take? Are you and I ever going to be friends? And Dargo is like, no, I don't think we will. And he's like, can we at least respect each other as you know, like, co-workers.
Co-workers,
you know,
yeah.
As shipmates, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he's like, all right, yeah, I can respect you at least as a fellow soldier.
Good.
You
good.
Know?
Yeah.
Okay, good. That's all I need. I don't need your friendship. I just need you to see me as another soldier.
Yeah.
To fight alongside, you know.
Yeah. And then that changes everything.
And that changes everything. That gives him the wedge in the door. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and that sometimes is all you need, is that wedge to start things.
And sometimes some of your best relationships are those rivalries. Mm-hmm. You know, I talk endlessly ad nauseum about Deep Space Nine, but look at Quark and Odo.
Mm-hmm. No, I love them.
Down to the last episode when they're leaving Deep Space Nine, and you have that perfect moment for the Quark goes, "You're gonna miss me," and you kind of expect Odo to turn around and go like,
With every bullet.
I busted your balls a lot, but yeah, I am going to miss you, you lovable little scamp. Yeah. Come here, buddy. Bring it in.
Right.
You know? But he just taunts him. He's just like, no, of course not. I lose sleep over you every single night. Why would I miss you? I named my first, second, and third ulcers after you, buddy. You know?
Yeah.
Like, no, I'm not going to miss you. This is the greatest day of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And he turns and walks off, and Quark is just smiling at him and goes, love you too, buddy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because you can't say it. That would make it weird.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But you know.
Yeah.
You know Odo is overperforming because, yes, he really is going to miss the guy.
Yeah. Because he can't say anything else.
Yeah.
No, I think that was it. I was my brain was going into another thought, but no, you hit it. You mm-hmm. actually did do it. But okay, so let me at least think this way. Storytellers, this does not mean that you get to sit back and eat popcorn.
Oh, agreed.
Like, I was saying at the beginning, like, you can learn a lot from your players about their characters and what they want to do and where they're going and their goals
mm-hmm.
just by letting them talk. So this is where you make your notes.
Mm-hmm.
This is where you figure out if they changed direction, if maybe these things are not so important to them, right? Or certain people are not so important to them or are important to them,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
What are their deepest desires? What are their real interests,
you know,
that they're not thinking about?
And don't be afraid to have an NPC flat up ask them these questions.
I love that. Just straight up, like, what's bothering you tonight?
That campfire scene you were mm-hmm. saying that you loved so much
mm-hmm.
was exactly that. It was that NPC you guys were bonding with going around the campfire saying, you know, you and I haven't really ever talked a lot, you know, but you're always part of this group and your friends talk about you like this. What is it you want out of life? You know, what is it you're seeking? You know, what makes you tick? And just let, you know, that's not a barbed question in any way.
No,
that's just let the character talk about what they want
yeah.
for a little bit, you know,
because
let them be passionate for 10 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, when they're in the moment of the plot, that is where the player's mind is focused on them doing their best,
mm-hmm.
and realistically, so is the character.
Mm-hmm.
They're being a role within a role at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? But when you can peel back those layers and make the player examine their character and what has happened to them
mm-hmm.
and apply it, it kind of throws them a little bit into a whole new mind frame.
Yeah.
And makes them work a little bit at what they're doing. And really, by the end of it, like, it's kind of character therapy in itself.
It really is.
And they can learn a lot about where they want to go with things
mm-hmm.
and how they feel about them. One of the, some of the most interesting things are, that can come out of that is you can learn party dynamics that don't happen on the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can see who's running things, really, versus who's leading things, versus who's following,
mm-hmm.
right? You get that tiered progression as people are slowly communicating and bringing those things to light, and it helps them figure their place in them for themselves.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like all of that because it gets, for lack of a better term, and I think it's the most accurate term, it makes it more intimate.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And because you're unguarded.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's exceptionally important. And as a storyteller, there is nothing wrong. And it's actually, I would encourage that you let your players know that that's what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't want them to step into this guarded. You don't want them looking over their shoulder or thinking there's a grand reason why they're sitting at this campfire having a chat. Like, something's going to come through the woods. Like, it burns me that in the past when I played D&D and ran games for players that I would talk about, you know, oh, you guys are camping for the night. And the first thing they would do is immediately start setting up watches and figuring out the ultimate way to not get screwed in the night.
Because that's D&D. That's what it trains you to do.
It's unnecessary.
I know.
It is completely unnecessary.
I know.
But it's oddly taught.
Games
to keep
teach
everybody
you how they want yeah, to be played.
It keeps you on your toes. So I encourage you as a storyteller, I'm going to use that term
mm-hmm.
to get you away from that design.
Mm-hmm.
This is an OSR.
Yeah.
tell your players that you're having a beer and pretzels session where dice may not hit the table in any way. And
yeah.
In fact, don't even think about it. Like, your talkie characters, it isn't their session. Mm-hmm. Just as much as it isn't a fighty session. Everybody in on this.
I think that's a great thing to add, because I think it's one of the big dangers you run into, especially like if you do have a very like action goal oriented group, that like if you're like, okay, well, this is going to be a very talky session,
mm-hmm.
your quote unquote social character with the 18 charisma and the manipulation feats and all that jazz is going to go like, oh good, it's my time to shine, I'm going to win at conversation, I'm going to get a good grade at talking, yes. which is something that's normal to want and possible to achieve,
I'm going to kill their social hit points and win.
Yeah. And it's not about that. Mm-mm. It's about letting your guards down and just being people for a session, mm-hmm. instead of being fighters and warlocks and wizards and druids.
Yeah, let those desires fly. Let the things that you're passionate about come out in those moments. I mean, I'm just going to say this, if you played Baldur's Gate, you know what the camp scenes are for.
Yeah. The camp scenes in Baldur's Gate 3 are amazing examples of this.
Mm-hmm.
You've got no clock ticking.
Short of the actual plot injections that they put in, but
there's a few of those. But yeah, for the most part, you know, your camp is your safe space, where you've got no clock ticking, no enemies are going to encroach upon you, except for maybe once or twice. Spoilers, sorry. And you've got time to just go and talk to other characters. Reflect on what's going on in the plot. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that battle we just got in? How do you feel about that information we just learned?
Yeah.
You know? How are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
How are you coping with having a tadpole in your head?
Yeah.
You know?
You know, do you feel loss from that thing that just happened to us? How are you coping with that? Do you need to cuddle?
Do you also feel this bond growing between us?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a bond of friendship, comradeship, or is it
respect.
Something more.
Yeah, like, I'm sorry, anybody enjoy Karlach? Thank you very much.
Buddy, oh, do not get me started on Karlach.
I was reading someone, they're like, if you've been a demon for this long and you haven't had contact with anyone, and then suddenly you make it back to the mortal plane and a bunch of people are there that you're having very intimate contact with, of course you're going to Karlach it.
Oh, yeah.
You are on.
Oh, yeah.
You are on. No, I Karlach's an amazing character and a wonderful trope about what it means to be distant from humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally have a connection again.
Also, Muscle Mommy.
Yeah. Mm. Mm. Such a great voice, too. Incredible actor.
I digress.
Yes. So the idea isn't that you... The idea is that you're trying to make sure that all your players feel comfortable, that their characters don't have to be on point.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing to be here. There's nothing suboptimal.
Exactly. Yeah.
About being your fighter can have just as much conversation and engagement as your super social.
So just straight up tell them, this is a safe space.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to attack you here. You have a moment to decompress if you guys want to.
You don't need a safe word.
you don't need a safe
word. You don't need a safe word in this space. Exactly. We're okay. Yes, you're right, Overwatch. Karlach is hot.
Karlach is hot.
But not only because she has like an engine in her chest that's actually burning,
right.
Which I think was a fantastic side plot of trying to figure out how someone can have physical contact with her, because mm-hmm. otherwise they're literally set on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a hot chick.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
We didn't have questions so much as we had discussion.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. It was like the questions that came to us are more like, I'll give you a topic, discuss amongst yourselves.
But I think they were very good. One of our new members, Captain, who actually we're going to be talking to next week,
yeah,
we'll get to that in a minute, was bringing up some things where we're talking about like the return of composure, and this kind of dovetails back into what I was saying about the mechanics mm-hmm. of Blades in the Dark, of like sins and things like that, or even just recovering from sanity problems.
Vices.
Yeah. Recovering from sanity issues in mm-hmm. other games. You know, this can be used for that mechanic.
Sure.
It gives you an extension of it, of basically saying, I'm letting you guys figure out how you want to use this time. instead of it just being a roll and a throwaway moment.
Yeah.
Right? Of saying, I'm going to go drinking. Great. What happened? You know, and you're just like, okay, what happens? And it seems lame, but you're just like, okay, who else is going with you? What do you mean? You're not making any rolls. Tell me how it goes.
Yeah.
Show me a scene. Okay. Give us a bar to go to. Heads or tails? Heads.
It's fo'c'sle.
It's a horrible place.
Mm-hmm.
But the drinks aren't bad, and it's really cheap.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
You can get away for a couple copper here, what you'd normally have to pay gold for, kind of a thing. And, you know, the bartender knows you.
Yeah.
So, you know, those kinds of things. And I think that it... I like the concept of losing it or going insane kind of dovetails back to the player.
Mm-hmm.
Like, your player needs those moments to have a little bit of composure.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
What's interesting is that Mad Elf then stepped in, was talking about bringing real world into it. Meaning, like, not only do your players go and have a good meal, maybe you dovetail this into actually having food at the table.
Yeah, during game as actual, like, at literal desserts.
Yeah.
And that's actually something that I've done before, on a couple occasions, actually. I remember the Count of Anvil kind of invited you guys over to essentially give you the mission to go and hunt the bandits in the Highlands, because it had gotten to the point where the Count was getting directly involved, you know? I wanted to make, like, a big dinner scene of it, where he kind of praised you guys for... your prior victories, and, you know, let you know that's why he was choosing you for this. And I wanted to send you guys off feeling really good about the mission, about who you were, that you were getting this sort of recognition and whatnot. So I had this sort of elaborate dinner scene planned where he was going to toast you guys. And so I actually bought a bottle of wine.
Mm-hmm.
And poured out a glass for everybody. And so when they did it, when, you know, there was a raising of glasses and a toast to the success of your adventuring group, you all were able to actually raise your glasses together. And it's, I mean, was it meaningless in the grand scheme of things? Sure. But did it add just that little extra nice little touch that drew you into the scene? I like to think so.
And for me,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to bring this all the way back to something we talked about years ago.
Okay.
And that is that role-playing really, as far as the way that it imprints into your mind, is no different than reality.
Mm-hmm.
And the more stimulus connections that you have, the more real it is.
Yeah.
So making a role that you fought with some, you know, that you had a fight with somebody is one thing. Like, that's just a board game mechanic.
Sure.
Talking about how that fight goes blow by blow.
Mm-hmm.
Is way different. And then later, either reminiscing in a positive light or feeling concern about what you just did.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And physically having a drink to toast the loss of those who fell, that you couldn't recover, and that were lost to the mists. Like, now you're going the entire mile. That's imprinted.
Mm-hmm.
Like, later on when you have a moment and, like, there's graves that you're passing, you know, as you leave the kingdom for the final time, and you look and you know those stones.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, your character, you as a player are going to feel that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard. Like, that's a moment that you have now connected with that feeling. And
right,
that's
right.
Some of the best moments you can create.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And to have a lasting impression upon everyone.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's all you can hope for. Is right. That you get that moment, that you get that connection.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I have little more to add to that.
Well, there we have it.
Just to say, actually, my ultimate goal would be to someday have catering brought in.
Mm-hmm.
When you guys are at, like, an important state dinner in the game or something like that, and literally have, like, some highfalutin, like, you know, $50 a dish catering brought in for you.
Mm-hmm.
Of just, like, and, you know, and the bell rings, and, like, people come in, dressed in black and white maitre d' outfits,
so...
and put plates in front of you. Just for the flex. I'm sure it'll never happen, but I would love to have that flex.
If you... I could see doing a game at a nice hotel,
mm-hmm.
where you had, like, the boardroom, and you're all sitting around the boardroom table, and you just work it out with the kitchen.
Oh, God, that would be great.
Because you could totally do that.
Yeah.
And have it come in on trays that are set down and reveals.
Yeah.
Like, there'd be a price for it, but you could totally do that, and nobody would know that it happened.
Oh, man.
The other thing that would work really well, and we kind of, I was directed to this by someone, or by one of our listeners, actually, was that there are cruises that have games that you can play on.
Yeah.
I've looked at a few of them. A lot of them are straight up D&D or Pathfinder kind of heavy, or they're all crammed in one room.
Mm-hmm.
One that I was looking at that kind of has been progressing over the years has gotten better with the cruise lines, and they're now getting rooms for each one of the game sessions. But that would be another situation where it would be pretty easy to ramp that up because they have the staff. It's a much smaller venue, and the food is all right there.
Those bitches got lobster. You just know it.
Exactly. Like, it wouldn't be that hard to set that moment up, and I could see that being a pretty cool moment.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, I feel that there's definitely some flexibility there.
Didn't you and I have a conversation a while back about doing something where we would, like, invite everybody to a hotel for, like, a weekend of gaming or something like that?
Yeah.
You and I got to revisit that. Just to throw those ideas back around and cement them a little more.
We've talked about doing an on-site where, like, you know, we go to, like, Ravenwood or something like that, and we do it at a site so that those who are involved and those who aren't still have
something to do
within it. Yeah. So, you know, it's not just a bunch of stinky people in a single hotel room kind of a thing.
Right.
The Mad Elf years ago did a pilgrimage to I think Vegas, where they gamed in, everybody met in Vegas and gamed.
Nice.
For a weekend, I think it was. And it was a great experience for him. And so, like, but I mean, that was a time when, like, flights were cheap and it was easy to do, but it got them away from where they were and put them in a moment, which I think is a lot to say.
Yeah,
is getting
absolutely.
Everybody locked down for something like that.
Yeah.
Like, you did the camping stuff, which, again, puts you in a moment to try and focus on something like that. It wasn't dedicated to your game. It was something you guys would do.
Sure.
So, but, yeah. I think that was a complete... I think we wrapped that up quite nicely.
Yeah, okay.
You
want to talk about next week?
Yes. So we kind of said that we had a person joining us because our next week we're doing System Spotlight, and we've actually are spotlighting a game that is literally going to be kickstarted the night of the show.
Yeah. It's real exciting, actually. So this the game's called Eureka. It's a tabletop role-playing game that features investigation mechanics that lets players take initiative, use their character's unique strengths to find clues, deduce conclusions, rather than just walk into a room and kind of roll, investigate, you know. So think, you know, very Brindlewood Bay, very Gumshoe sort of thing, but it is ostensibly an urban fantasy setting, very akin to, like, your Urban Shadows, your Dresden Files got name dropped in there, sprinkling of Lovecraftian Call of Cthulhu sort of stuff. A lot of those little influences there. So if you've got a thing for urban fantasy and you've got a thing for investigation games,
listen up next week.
Then next week you may want to listen up, and especially get the Kickstarter details to help make this happen. And we will have one of the creators of their on our Discord goes by Captain.
Yeah, we actually might have two of them.
Okay,
we're still waiting to find out, but please listen in. We're all going to be very excited to hear about this. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll have them live on the show. All right, you can find us on Twitter at @ST_conclave, on Instagram at @ST_conclave. Listen to us live every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern time on mixlr.com/storyteller-conclave, and join us on our Discord. We'd love to hear from you there. You can find that link on our Twitter as well as our website, storytellerconclave.com.
We'd like to thank our Patreon members who help us out every single month with the show, especially our name members, Knox in the Box, Subjet, The Arcane Asylum, Huluvu, Sam, Sean, and Sparkle Motion. We appreciate all your support. Our pre-show music is by Arcane Anthems. You can find them on Instagram or Patreon as Arcane Anthems. Our intro music is Beyond the Warriors by Geefrog. You can find them at geefrog.bandcamp.com or on YouTube Music. And our outro music, which you're hearing right now, is Only Our Footprints in the Sand by Midair Machine. You can find them at freemusicarchive.org.
And big shout out, as always, to our families, Vicky and Sean. Thank you so much for loving and supporting us. All of our friends who've sat at our tables, give these great stories to share with you over the years. And you, every single one of our listeners, we love you guys so much.
Love you.
Good night.
Good night.